Mark Ballard is with us. And, Mark, before we get to the budget chaos at the Capitol, which we thought was over, but it may not be, we're less than 39 hours from John Kennedy's stated deadline of deciding whether to run for governor. He said December 1st, and in 39 hours it will be December 1st. What's going to happen in the waning hours as we wait for Hamlet on the Bayou to make up his mind?
I can tell you for sure that there's going to be a lot of coverage of it, which is precisely what he likes to see. If you ask 50 people, they're going to tell you 50 different ideas of what's going to be happening. And I can't, you know, I'll give you an idea of it, but it'd just be the 51st. So there's no one really knows for sure whether he's going to be running or not. And I guess we'll be finding out fairly soon, maybe tomorrow, maybe Saturday.
Well,
and, I do know that that he's under pressure from the donors and the Republican Party to kind of make a decision so that if he is not going to run, that he'll free up the field for the others.
Well, he's a man who knows how to secure a moment, and this will be a big moment for him. He has entered a governor's race once before in 2003, 15 years ago, and then when Bobby Jindal got in, John Kennedy shortly thereafter withdrew. This time, he will, of course, will not withdraw. He'll go to the post, and if that happens, I think it'll be a good race, a very good race, and Kennedy says he will win. Of course, I don't think he's getting in there to lose, but it's probably a 50-50 proposition between him and John Bel Edwards.
Well, you have to look at the surveys that he's been doing, and what is showing right now is that he has about a little over 50%, but we haven't had any kind of campaigning whatsoever, and he's starting off at about 50%. That's not a bad place to start, but it's also not determinative of what's going to be happening, you know, a year from now or, you know, 8 months from now. And we remember that Senator Vitter started off in a similar position and ended up barely making it into the runoff last time.
But David Vitter had issues that John Kennedy does not. Senator Kennedy, in a long life in the public realm, has never been tainted by scandals. So he is running as a Republican. John Bel Edwards is running as a Democrat. And it is a red state, but John Bel Edwards is not he's not your conventional Democrat, is he?
No, he's not. He tends to be far more moderate than the Nationals and whoever runs, whether it's Senator Kennedy or Representative Abram, that whoever runs is going to be focusing on what the National Democratic Party stands for, which is far more left-leaning than Governor Edwards, and that's going to be a campaign issue. But he's, you know, anti-abortion and pro-gun and has a military background, and so that's been very persuasive for voters in the past.
Now, a story that's gained even national attention is one involving a woman running for a House seat who the Ethics Board has stated cannot use campaign funds for child care while she attends campaign events. The board's vote was 5-2 last week. It reverses an opinion 18 years ago which allowed Daryl Orso to use campaign funds for child care. And this is a Morgan LaMandrea, an attorney who's running for a House seat in District 66 in Baton Rouge. It asked for an opinion stating in her request that state law does not explicitly allow for such spending. She and her husband work full-time and have a toddler and a six-year-old. She's seeking to unseat Rick Edmonds, the Republican who lost the seat, the Secretary of State's race a few weeks ago, but holds this seat. And this also is something that U.S. Senator John Kennedy has, and several others, I might add, but John Kennedy has used child care for campaign expenses when he has run. So this is an interesting move by the Ethics Board.
It is, and the ethics board moved independently of what the staff had recommended, which was to continue on with the rules as it had been for years, they're basically saying that the money, that campaign money, ought to be used for campaigning, and that the candidate had not been specific enough about using child care to go to this particular event or to go to this particular fundraiser, and because of that, then therefore she couldn't be using it, kind of having a general ability to use it. But that's also very difficult because it's hard on these campaigns to get a board of ethics opinion prior to an event that's could be happening in 2 weeks.
So, yeah, it would seem that this would be a legitimate use of campaign funds. As we've seen in the past, there have been more egregious uses of campaign funds than this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But they put up a nearly impossible bar for the use of child care. The use of campaign funds for child care, and I guess it can be, we'll see how that changes during the legislative session. There have been a couple of legislators that said, well, wait a minute, we can change that law, and we will.
And a listener notes that Senator Kennedy, always being the sharpest knife in the drawer, found a way to use this for his advantage, and legitimately so. He used campaign funds for child care. And Senator Kennedy, the listener asks, will have to convert money he has raised for his U.S. Senate quests to a governor's election, and asks if there's a precedent for this, and I believe there is with Senator Vitter, isn't there?
There is. He was able to do it. It's a several-step process, but he was able to do it, using third-party PACs. And my guess is that Senator Kennedy, who, when he ran for the Senate, took his state money and did it through a third-party PAC that supported his candidacy, and used that money to run for the U.S. Senate. And my guess is that he'll use the that same step that was brought about by Senator Vitter to do the opposite if he runs.
And at the Capitol, there is now talk of cutting out the sales tax. It was hard fought, the additional portion of a penny, because of a rosier than expected budget scenario. What's going on there?
Well, I'm not sure that that's actually going to come to pass, but there is talk about that. The Republicans in the House primarily are trying to keep some of that money in reserve, so they're saying, look, the price of oil is going down, that's going to impact us, but a large part of it, and as we saw in the REC meeting the other day, is a number of people are saying this is just an effort to try to keep the governor, giving the governor a win.
Well, the legislature does not like the governor, it appears. It's a Republican-dominated legislature and a Democratic governor. And that's one area where I think the governor was a bit naive. He thought he would get along well with House members. He was once in that chamber with most of them that are there now, but they've been tough on him.
Yeah, and that's, that is to be expected. I mean, it has happened all through history. Franklin Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, they've all had to deal with the legislators that are of a different party.
877-217-5757 is your number. We're back with Mark Ballard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate, is with us for another segment. And he's been down at the Capitol. Revenue Estimating Conference this week has met. And there is some talk that there may be a move to reduce taxes. This is very similar to what happened in Bobby Jindal's first term, his first year, his first session. Lawmakers voted to undo Stelly and put him on the spot, and he ended up having to accept it. Otherwise, he would have looked foolish because of his mantra against taxes. And this, if lawmakers decided to reduce taxes, would put Governor John Bel Edwards on the spot in an election year. Is this about politics, Mark Ballard?
Oh, yeah, it is totally about politics. That's the grease that runs things over here.
And that's not going to stop.
No, that's not going to stop. The effort here, of course, is we're going into a gubernatorial election, and they're going to try to make it as difficult as possible for the governor to seek and win re-election.
It would be interesting to see what would happen if there were a Republican governor with a Republican legislature. Now, Bobby Jindal had that, but still had issues. John Kennedy has a somewhat different philosophy than Governor Jindal did. He wants to cut, but not in certain areas. For example, John Kennedy says TOPS is not cuttable, that he would preserve that to the day he dies. So we're going to have quite a philosophical battle if this happens, and it probably will. And Kennedy, of course, is on the record as saying he doesn't want the Medicaid money from the federal government. And as you've noted, almost 500,000 people in the state are now taking advantage of that program. So this will be an ideological fight to the finish, I think, between Kennedy and Edwards.
Yes, I think it will be, or whoever happens to be the Republican candidate. I think those are the main issues that will be coming up.
Kennedy has effectively blocked any Republican of note from getting in. Maybe Ralph Abraham, but with 10.5 months between now and Election Day, it would seem it would have to be somebody with big-time name recognition to be a formidable challenger. Even Roy Fletcher, the noted Republican, says you can't beat somebody with nobody. And
right.
At this point, Kennedy may be the last hope for the Republicans.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. You have Eddie Risponi, the businessman from here in Baton Rouge, has deep pockets. And I want to point out that Roy Fletcher was the strategist behind taking Scott Angell, who had a very minimal 2% name recognition in February, and making him very close to getting into the runoff in the last gubernatorial election. He was able to, they basically came up with a strategy of flooding the airways in February with getting to know you ads. And Scott Angell raised his public name recognition in that race in that short amount of time. So, you know, yes, he's right on one hand, but then he also has proven that you can get around that.
Well, Angell, though, had been lieutenant governor, and he'd been around a long time.
Right.
And
but he had a 2% name recognition.
He was not well known around the state. You're right about that. And he was probably about 2 weeks away from winning the governor's election, because if he'd gotten in a runoff with John Bel Edwards, he quite likely would have won that race. But it did not.
I think Governor Edwards, from the get-go, was assuming that they would be running against David Vitter, and they had planned to run against David Vitter. So I think that your surmise that Angell would have actually won that race had he gotten into the runoff is probably accurate.
Yeah, Edwards wanted Vitter, and Vitter wanted Edwards. And look what happened. John Bel Edwards won by 12 percentage points. He's the only governor in the Southeastern Conference states, all 11 of them, that is a Democrat. In the U.S. Senate, Mark, there are 22 senators representing those 11 states, one Democrat, Doug Jones in Alabama, 21-1. In fact, Democrats in the other 39 states lead the Senate by a wide margin, 46 Democrats and 34 Republicans, 32 Republicans. So the Southeastern Conference is responsible for the Republicans controlling the United States Senate.
Yes. And it has been that way, I guess, since Richard Nixon's time has started the movement of primarily white Democrats into the Republican Party.
Yeah, but it 15 years ago in Louisiana, all the statewide positions were held by Democrats except for Fox McKithen. So we've had this red tide sweep Louisiana and many other southern states. Arkansas is very similar. There were two Democratic U.S. senators and a Democratic governor in Arkansas not so long ago. But that has changed, and it probably will not revert back for some time.
No, but I think that was a matter of labeling. I think that was a matter of labeling, because the Democrats in the South were very conservative and often aligned with the Republican Party. And now they just call themselves Republicans.
In most cases, but yeah. There were some exceptions. Dale Bumpers in Arkansas certainly was not a conservative. But in Louisiana, Bill Clinton, he carried Louisiana twice in 1992 and 96, and those were not close races. He won here by big margins. But 22 years later, I don't see a Democrat, whether the name is Clinton or anybody else, carrying Louisiana in a presidential election.
I think the way that it's set up now, I think you're spot on in that surmise. The way we have it now, there is no Democrat on the national horizon that would be acceptable for Louisiana voters.
This Monday in the New York Times, Charles Blow had a column in which he interviewed Mitch Landrieu. He came to New Orleans, and Mitch Landrieu, of course, not ruling out a run for president himself, and the national media are in large numbers, or they really like the former mayor of New Orleans. But Mitch Landrieu was quoted as saying, Donald Trump is a racist, and then he said, I better watch out. He'll come back and call me bald-headed Mitch. So that would be a race between Trump and Landrieu, wouldn't it?
I think it would be. But I don't think that in that race that Landrieu would carry Louisiana.
No, he would not. He would not. But Donald Trump did not carry New York. The first presidential winner not to carry his home state since 1916, when Woodrow Wilson failed to carry New Jersey. Donald Trump lost New York by a big margin, and he lost New York City. He only got 15% in his hometown, the place where they knew him best, they liked him least, and Hillary Clinton only got 34% in Arkansas. So how do you figure that?
Yeah, well, Hillary lives in New York now, so
she does. She does. She ran as a New Yorker as well, but she spent most of her life, her adult life, in the great state of Arkansas, 12 years as first lady, a prominent lawyer, and they did not like her there nearly as much as they liked her husband, who won right. five races for governor. But
well, I think what we saw in the midterms is that the country is fairly evenly split, and often operating within their own little bubbles, but they're fairly evenly split along partisan lines.
Fairly evenly split, but the House, it looks like Democrats will gain 40 seats. We'll have 235 of the 435 seats in the United States House. What does this mean going forward for Steve Scalise?
Well, he says he's not going to come back to the state to run for governor. I guess, you know, Cincinnatus said he would not come back to rule Rome and see what happened. I think what it means is that he's setting himself up for when the Republicans do retake the House for being a speaker, if he decides to stay in Washington.
Yeah, he's 53 years old. He's got a long time. I saw Dianne Feinstein just won another six-year term in California, and she's well into her 80s. As Mark Shields once said, lawmakers in Washington, they usually either leave one of two ways, by the ballot box or the pine box. And Steve Scalise, he may have Potomac fever now. He seems to like it there.
Well, he's only a step away. I mean, the path to being the Speaker of the House is fairly clear for him and fairly articulate for him now. You know, does he want to give that up to come back home? And, I mean, I can't speak for him, but, I mean, it would seem to me that that he would stay up in Washington.
Well, Mark,
he's got a very secure district, right. So he doesn't have to worry about
right.
that.
Thanks for joining us. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, newspaper of record in Louisiana.